Hello, and welcome to the Digging Deeper podcast, hosted by ForConstructionPros.com, covering various aspects of the construction industry, including the equipment, people, companies, and associations making it all happen. This is Jonathan, and as editor for the Concrete Contractor magazine, this is a concrete episode. Even though it's been around for a while, I wanted to find the rabbit hole that is synthetic fiber reinforcement and see what I could find. As luck would have it, not too long ago, I ran into Vance Poole, who has been in the fiber reinforcement area for going on about 40 years now. Figured he'd be a good source and a person to talk to. He's currently the manager of the National Business Development Group at Euclid Chemical. He's part of the team that works with owners, engineers, architects, and the people that write the specifications so they understand how to use the company's products. Basically, it's the big three: how to save money, go faster, and do the things that people want to do in building today. How long have you been familiar with concrete fiber reinforcement?
I've spent a lot of my career, I've been in the concrete industry, but I've always seemed to have some fibers in there. I mean, I spent a number of years at what is now GCP, who was formerly known as W.R. Grace. I was there when they launched their first microfibers, which they actually called microfiber. That was, the brand name at the time. I was familiar with the plastic shrinkage, little fibers. And then I was director of marketing at FiberMesh for a number of years, which at the time was the largest fiber company. And here at Euclid, based on the information I have, we're number one in this space right now on the macro fibers. And so I've kind of been around all of it. Obviously, I've been around steel fibers and other things, but it's a constantly evolving market.
So when I wanted to talk about macro fibers and fiber reinforcement, you're pretty much a really good guy to talk to about it.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of my career in it. It's funny because I think I've had jobs thrown at me in the fiber space recently. Even it's something I've been doing for a long time, and I enjoy it. It's nice to drive some change in the marketplace.
Yeah. It's probably not that old of a product if you look at the history of concrete in general, but it's also not a new product. It's been around for a few decades. What can you tell me about the history of fiber and concrete?
Well, I think you go all the way back to Egyptian times, and they're using straw and mud bricks, right? So that overall same concept. If you look at the Roman concrete, they used ox blood for air entrainment and horse hairs as fibers in some of their concrete. So that's 2,000 years ago, but in America, we really didn't have fibers in concrete until about, 30, 40 years ago, the microfibers started to show, and the macrofibers maybe 20 years ago, roughly.
But we've moved into microfibers and macrofibers, right? Stuff like that. So how has that changed?
Well, when the first fibers were invented and patented in the United States, they were what they called a fibrillated fiber. They kind of look like, to me, I think like a snow fence. You're thinking what snow drifts are. That it was kind of a connected series with created very furry concrete, but it did its job, and that was for plastic shrinkage cracks. And then as the market evolved, we moved into microfibers for those, which are, they're like your human hair, really. They're anywhere from a quarter inch to as long as people want to make them, basically, but they're hair-like fibers. And so, it's kind of like statistics, right? You get enough fibers in there, concrete's going to crack. I mean, I heard one of the smartest guys I know in concrete, I heard this 30 years ago, concrete will crack. It's going to crack. There's no two ways around it. So what microfibers do is they get those cracks when they're so small that they're not even visible to the naked eye. And they stop the cracks from getting together and becoming bigger cracks. So you get much less crack. So the more fibers you have, the finer the fibers, the more crack control you get. So it's evolved in that space. And then literally in the last 20 years, the market has moved to macrofibers, which synthetic macrofibers, most of them are 1.5 to 2 inches long. They're thicker and they're replacing temperature and shrinkage steel. And it will even take some moments in certain applications. But like everything, they have their limits, right?
Sure. when new products come into construction, and especially in concrete construction, it tends to kind of go slow until it gets really get going. Do you know how popular they were when they first came out, and then how much of a use it is today?
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting in this space. The American Concrete Institute has a committee called the Strategic Development Committee, and they're the people that are looking far out. What's the future of the industry? How do we evolve the industry and get better, et cetera? And one of their first studies, I was fortunate enough to be on that committee, I don't know, a long time ago. And they literally said that it takes about 17 to 20 years for an innovation in concrete to become a practice. Because you think about it, you're swimming upstream. I mean, engineers, architects, they don't want to get sued. We got lawyers everywhere. So they don't want to take risk. The contracting base generally, you know, they know how to do things. They do it a certain way. They can estimate it. They can budget it and make money on a project because they've done it this way. So when you change something, you're changing all those cost structures and introducing risk to them. So, you know, there's a lot of contractors that are hesitant to change also to try something new. So all those headwinds basically make it so that it's very, very difficult for new products to come in. So I've watched macrofibers for the last 20 years, and, you know, they have novel use for the first 5 or 6 years. You know, people used them on certain things, but they had almost no market share. But in the last few years, that's changed.
Why do you think that's being changing right now? Why is it so popular today?
Well, I think, you know, it had finally reached a point where the market was starting to understand the value before COVID hit. At that time, in the South Central United States, where I spend most of my time, and it varies in any market, it'll vary based on steel price and everything else, but they were saving maybe total in place install cost about a quarter a square foot. Well, that gets people's attention when you start talking about a quarter a square foot. That's a quarter of a million on a million square foot slab. So that got the attention. Well, when the growth curve was huge already. I mean, it was growing at a significant amount. By that time, you had people like Amazon and others who were using all their projects. But when the COVID hit, price of steel went through the roof. And now we see anywhere from 50 cents, 75 cents a dollar a square foot savings in place cost, installed cost. Well, that's too much to ignore. And it's caused a further acceleration of the growth of macrofibers. And like I say, there's a lot of people use them today. It's becoming commonplace. I'm not saying it's number one in the market, but it's becoming commonplace.
Sure. If number one in the market is whatever that is, how far behind are we talking here?
Yeah, there's no national clearinghouse measuring numbers right now. Like the Cement Association measures cement output, and the ready-mix guys measure ready-mix. The fiber people, there's enough manufacturers and it's dispersed enough that there's no real hard data that I'm aware of. But okay. If I had to just, you know, kind of put my thumb up and do my estimate, I mean, it's got to be at a point where now we're 5-10% market share. I don't know. It's enough to matter. It's enough to be significant. And it's still not big enough that there's a lot of growth to come.
Sure. It's only used in, like, mainly used in flat work, correct?
Correct. Flat work is the primary location. I mean, we're not talking about steel fibers much today. They have a bunch of different applications, but these macrofibers, slabs on ground, elevated slabs, composite metal decks are probably the primes. Pavement applications. I mean, we have state DOTs that specify macrofibers in their concrete paving now. I mean, so that's a huge difference. Bridge decks, things like that, all kinds of applications they're all flat work, you know, which I think last time I looked, flat work represented around half of the market of all concrete placed.
Basically. Oh, geez.
Yeah, half.
Wow. You mentioned a few good examples of some DOTs putting that into their pavement. And I understand the SoFi Stadium is a really good example of fibers in concrete. They're the stadium over in Los Angeles.
Yes.
2022 Super Bowl, if you will.
Yes.
Are there any other famous examples that come to your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of bridges and things like that, but the things that jump out to me the most is Amazon, when they were on their giant terror building warehouses through sometime last year, their warehouses, They have three tiers of warehouses, their largest warehouses, 2 million square feet to 10 million square feet of warehouse per location, basically. They do macrofibers and all their deck material, all their elevated slabs everywhere. You look at FedEx, they put it in all their warehouses now. Tractor Supply puts it in all their stores now. We just did the Tesla plant last year, which was a 5 million square foot slab, basically, which I try and talk to people that aren't in the construction industry, and that's 45 Walmart super centers lined up next to each other is how big 5 million square feet is. I mean, that's huge. People don't realize. But, you know, it's going in lots of projects. I mean, we've done 4 or 5 stadiums. I'd have to look at a list. But a lot of the new stadiums, almost all the topping slabs are macrofibers. And so there's plenty of examples to point to now.
Why do you think these projects are choosing fiber?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, once somebody's done it once, they convert reasonably easily because they see the cost savings and obviously money, right? What is construction about in America today? Build fast, build inexpensive, maybe build green. You know, I mean, these are kind of the themes we see. Well, fibers mean I don't have to have somebody putting out number 4 bar or wire mesh or whatever they were going to use in the slab before. Mm-hmm. So I've eliminated those costs and the time. And on a big project, that's a lot of time. So you throw that in, the material cost savings, there's safety issues. I mean, if you don't have bars every 16 inches across your whole slab, you're not going to trip on them. I mean, there's a lot of layers to the discussion, but I really think the speed of construction and the tightness of the steel market, all of these things have played into it.
Sure. But there's also got to be that cost of the material itself. So does that balance out that labor savings?
Yeah, it's funny because in the concrete industry, the ready mix people and precast people, they think in yards, but a contractor thinks in square feet, right? Everything's got to install cost per square foot. That's kind of the bottom line. And when you take out all that labor, the material cost is generally cheaper going to be than steel by itself, but then you add the labor in, and just those two components make for a significant saving. So it's really grabbing people's attention. And people don't even do the full calculation of the real savings, right? If I can cut 3 days off a project, then I can move the job trailer out 3 days early and the admin that sits in the job trailer and the phone that I got at the job trailer and all those overhead costs. I get rid of 3 days of that. What's that worth? I mean, those are not even really calculated in all this, but they add up. They add up in cost. So people that are doing it are liking it and like I said, I see nothing but growth over the next, 10 years. It's going to continue to grab market share.
Sure. If a contractor is familiar with the use of fiber and they have a upcoming project that they want to bid on, but they want to, put in an alternative bid.
Yes.
That would use fiber instead of what has been spec'd. How would they go about doing that? Is that even possible?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Every architecture engineering firm has their own way of handling things. But when you get right down to it, what most people will see is rather than do an alternate to bid, which the engineers are starting to do a lot of alternates, the engineers that haven't figured it out yet, they'll put an alternate in. All of a sudden, they'll see they're saving the money. And when they see that, that moves them forward. But as a contractor, you can at bid time or after negotiations come in and say, hey, we'd like to do this. My thought to our audience today is contractors is, in those instances, if you share a little bit with the owner, keep some profit for yourself, it's going to be a win-win. It's something you can bring in and show people. So, the thing is, that's what my team does for our company is in those instances, somebody's got to talk to the engineer. The engineer's got to sign off on any kind of change like this. So that's the kind of critical step in the process to make sure that the engineer's on board and will accept it. So it's, like I say, it's not, you could come in with an alternate, you can come in, with a substitution request, and that's probably going to be the more likely road to success, I would guess.
Yeah.
Than just bidding an alternate, because it's got to get signed off on. So you've got to work it through the construction team, basically.
Yeah, it's neat when you say the engineer has to sign off on these, because we met first at the 2022 ACI convention in the fall, And that night I was speaking with and just ended up running into a lot of structural engineers. And internally, I'm thinking, you guys are the most powerful people in the country, like really signing off on all of these structures and how they're made. And then I'm all like, wait a second, is that really true? Because then there's the contractors and actually the people in the mud doing this. They're the actual ones putting this all together. Right. You can have the engineer write things on a piece of paper all day long. And I was like, where am I going to go with this? But it was such an interesting, so many interesting conversations just to see this. These are the people building our country and making sure my bridge isn't falling on my head.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, sometimes you have owners that don't get involved and some you have owners that act like engineers and contractors too. So, you know, every project's unique in this industry, which keeps it interesting for us all.
Yeah. Can anyone use fiber in their concrete flat work?
Yeah, there's no reason. I mean, the only drawback I look at is, like, I live in the South Central United States, so we have some high plasticity clay soils. They're soils that expand and contract based on the amount of moisture in them. And I mean, the forces involved are significant. I mean, they break a 10 inch concrete road. They can break it without any problems. That kind of level of force, if the base layer is not done right, any good pavement or slab, it's about what you did under it. No matter how good the slab is, they didn't compact the soils or didn't treat them with lime or whatever needed to be done wasn't done, you get a problem. So, with that, I caution engineers, because if you got high plasticity soils, you got to take care of the soils. You know, if you don't take care of them, doesn't matter whether it's steel in there or whether it's synthetic macrofibers, you're gonna have a problem down the road. It's your pavement or your slab won't perform. And so I have to make people aware of that, because Texas, Louisiana, parts of the South, some major clays, and I'm sure it's a lot of other places around the country.
Sure. The name escapes me, but, and there's this old joke that there's an app for that. And back when apps started becoming a thing, and I'm showing my age. Yeah. But I believe there is an actual app for helping me estimate how much fiber I would need in a project.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've got one. I think others do as well, but ours is called Fiber Calc, and we have it at both the Android store and at Apple's store. And it's free download. And basically you go in and you put in the thickness of your concrete, the what strength concrete is, usually 3,500, 4,000 PSI, whatever it's going to be. Where is the steel located? How high up in the slab is it? Where is it located? Because that affects what load it can carry. Mm-hmm. And then basically what size bar or mesh and what's the spacing on it. You put that in there and it will tell you how many fibers you need to replace that steel, basically, and give you a PDF download of the structural calculations and everything right for you. So it's we're trying to make it as simple as we can for people. People are used to designing with steel. So go ahead and design it with steel and then just find out what the equivalent is.
Yeah. I want to find out the 5 million square feet, how many tons of fiber that actually is. And then just be like, huh, wow, that was an interesting 10 minutes. And then keep on moving.
Yeah, I don't remember how many truckloads there were of fibers in the job at Tesla, but I know we were driven at one point delivering 6 a week.
Oh, God.
Yeah, 6 truckloads of fibers a week. So that's the kind of scale of some of this stuff. But I mean, you think about it, it would have been 6 truckloads of steel, basically. Yeah. So, just different material showing up the job site.
Yeah. How can contractors tell if a slab is using fiber reinforcement? Are there any telltale signs?
Well, depending on the way you finish it, and that's key. I mean, we like to, on the team I'm on, we like to, have somebody out there when a contractor's doing it the first time, because there's tips and on anything to make sure it goes effectively and that it looks nice. But if somebody does a hard trowel finish and you can't really see the fibers on the top, if you look at where the saw cut joints are, if you look at the saw cut joints are where before you fill in the joint filler, you'll be able to see fibers. Sometimes at corners and edges of slabs, you'll be able to see some fibers. I mean, there's evidence they're there. Obviously, if you broom finish or do other things, there's a few fibers at the top. I mean, it's just what it is. But they wear off over time. But it's pretty easy to see. It's pretty easy to see because we're talking about these going at 3 or more pounds per cubic yard. So there's enough in there to see, basically, when you And like I say, saw cuts are the best place. You just look and see right down where you cut. You can see fibers being cut through.
Okay. I know we're not talking about steel fibers. We're more talking about synthetic, but are steel and synthetic fibers interchangeable? Is there a situation where one would be better choice for a construction job than the other?
Yeah. And I think, steel fibers have a long history, and we market them as well as many other companies do, and they're good products. Having said that, you have much higher pound dosage rates. I mean, really, to get significant performance, you're going to be 50, 100 pounds of steel fibers. Well, there's an issue of moving that, getting it in a truck or getting it in the, getting it in the concrete. It's a lot harder to deal with. The finishing becomes more critical. And if you don't mix them properly, they can agglomerate into a ball, basically. You know what I mean? If it's not mixed properly, that's key with steel fibers. When you look at applications, to me, the one that jumps out at me for steel fibers is when you're in a seismic design area and you've got a beam and a column that are coming together that you're casting, usually it's gotten to the point now that there's so much bar in there that you almost can't get the concrete in it. And there's been lots of work done to show that you can replace a bunch of that steel by putting steel fibers in there, and they become significant load carrying, members in there. There are some other applications. Some industrial floor people really like steel fibers. To me, the synthetics are just as good there in most cases. We did work with steel fibers. We worked with the boring company. That's Musk's tunnel company. We did work with them on the tunnels, and they're precast with steel fibers in them. They basically, made a tunnel, and it's in, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 sections. And basically they're reinforced completely with steel fibers.
Well, that's cool. But I went in there in underneath World of Concrete.
Yeah. Fibers are, they have certain uses that are really good. I mean, to me, I love that the synthetic microfibers don't rust. I mean, I'm doing a port job right now. Well, what's the biggest problem that they've got? Salt gets into the concrete, the steel corrodes, it expands, and they got to fix the thing in 10, 20, 30 years, however well they designed it, maybe more. Well, with no steel, you got no corrosion. With no corrosion, theoretically, the concrete could last for many, many decades, unless it's subjected to something else that's not good.
Sure.
So it's really we're starting to see that play out to a lot of people. I mean, you think about it, you do a parking lot in the northern United States, how many times is it going to get salt thrown on it in the winter? Eventually that's going to corrode steel, and you're going to have to replace a parking lot. So we're seeing a lot of advantages that people don't always see with these kind of products. You don't want an unhappy owner. Nobody wants an unhappy owner at the end of the project. So you got to, I tell people, try things out, make sure they understand what they're doing, make sure they got the right equipment. And there's a whole, how do you finish this thing it's a little different. You hit it with a roller screed or a vibratory screed. Most people use a vibratory screed.
Yeah.
Before you do anything, just knock fibers down, get a little paste up so they won't be as visible.
Are you aware of any contractors that are applying like a decorative element on top of their work?
That's one of the things we came out with the reprieve for. Because with the macrofibers, you can do decorative work, but I strongly recommend somebody have a full scale sample that they build on site to make sure everybody's aligned, that it works, and that they're happy with what it's going to be. Because you don't want to turn 100,000 square feet of decorative concrete and all of a sudden nobody likes it and you're tearing it out or whatever. So we don't promote heavily with the macrofibers in the decorative space. Now, we have toppings that can go on top of them and do that, things like that. But our reprieve, we make it in a quarter inch long fiber so that it's literally meant to go with decorative concrete. It's a good fit with it. So the fibers are so small and they're so short that you can do stamped concrete or stained or whatever kind of finishes you want to put on it. And I think that's decorative. We actually had a project the other day where somebody put decorative concrete in, polished concrete with fibers in it. Didn't say anything to us. Engineer specified it. We get there and it's already done. We were afraid it was going to be a problem because you could see the fibers. Now they were, it was a gloss finish, but you could see the fibers. And fortunately, they didn't have a problem with that. But we had recommended that they don't do that because some people have a problem with that. And yeah, that could be an expensive problem later for the contractor or somebody, and we don't want that. So it's Euclid Chemicals, like Master Builders and Seco, we have all the other products outside of these things too, you know, so that we have self-leveling floorings to put on top of these fibers to make it look really pretty if that's what you want to do, make it decorative, but not doing it on that slab, basically, is what I would recommend to people, because it will be objectionable to some percentage of people, you know, seeing the fibers, whatever percentage that is. Too many people, whatever that is.
What's your favorite little known fact about fiber reinforcement?
Not all fibers are the same in these macrofibers. All right. There's a geometry discussion, a proportion discussion. They use the word aspect ratio as one of the measurement denominators for these things. And there's a lot of difference in it. And whether you're using our calculator or somebody else's, it's designed for our product because every product's a different. They finish differently. They have different strength profiles. And so, I think those are the things that if brand A is specified, brand B may need more fibers, you know, or it may need less fibers based on how strong it is. So it's not as simple as it could be yet, but ACI and ASTM have put together testing requirements that allow you to measure these products and line them up that way. And using a term called residual strength from a test, they can show you how strong they are. So I think that's something important to note that's kind of way down in the bushes, but needs to be said probably.
Sure. I mean, it's not, you know, tissues. You can call it Kleenex, but they're all pretty much the same. You're going to be able to do the same thing. That's not there yet. They're all different a little bit.
They're all a little different. And I think that's something that people need to notice, because especially on finishability, like when Amazon started using macrofibers, they brought in a top-notch consulting engineering firm to assess the fibers. And so they would take a piece of a store or a warehouse and give 5, 6, 7 manufacturers 20,000 square feet each. So they come in and put your product in. And then they would measure everything. They would look at how it finished. How did the final slab turn out? You know, all the properties that were important to the owner, basically. And when all was said and done, they only allowed two products in the marketplace for the macrofibers, which we're happy to be one of. When Tesla did their project, we were the only job of product allowed on the site, which is rare today. That's rare today, right? Everybody wants an alternate bid or a convenient product. But so I guess I'm trying to say is there's a big difference from A to Z across the spectrum of these products. And some don't finish very well. Some have lower strengths. You've got to understand what you're dealing with as you deal.
And understand it's interesting that you bring out that synthetic is, you know, it's actually in fact synthetic, and it's a weird way to think about that. But Euclid came out with a new microfiber made out of the polyester material from plastic bottles. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, this is a new product we launched in the last year called Reprieve, and it's a microfiber. You know, it's just for plastic shrinkage cracks, right? The microfibers for that first 48 hours when the water's coming out, you don't want to get the cracks from the water coming out too fast. And it's a great product. I mean, the company that owns Euclid Chemicals, RPM International, and we have a lot of goals about trying to be better stewards of the environment. And this was one of them. We're managing how much water we use in our plants and all these things, trying to be better. But this product, it's basically taking plastic models out of the landfill and putting them in concrete slabs. And it's unfortunately not inexpensive. It's more to process. It's a little more to process. But it's a great way to relieve things from going to landfill and get a good use out of them. And that's less new product we have to make somewhere. You know,
sure. How do you capture those bottles?
We work with a partner in the company. They have a whole supply chain where they capture. It's not 100% bottles. There are other plastics that get involved in the process, but we like to use the bottles as an example to show everybody, because it's a hard way to, you know, easy way to explain the benefit of what's happening. Right. It's an amazing supply chain. They pull it in, they make the fibers, and they make them for a number of different applications, not just for us. And the ones that, you know, they fit a specification we need for our fibers. So it'll perform basically.
So you're saying I should do a better job of washing out my recyclables so they're I got a better product and down the supply chain, I guess.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys that sorts everything before I put it in my recycle bin, because I know somebody has to sort it at the other end, right?
Yeah. That's awesome. This the Reprieve, I believe it's officially named PSI Fiber Strand Reprieve 225.
You are correct.
And that was a mouthful. It's been selected as a top 10 finalist for the Next Level Awards program for the 2023 Con Expo show. It's like their first time doing this promotion.
Yeah.
I know every single time that we've been able to speak on the trade show floor, are you attending Con Expo at all? What can you tell me about UCOD's plans there?
Yeah, I will have a large exhibition. I personally, I don't know if I'm going to be attending. I'm on the road so much. I have a lot of conflicts. We'll have to see. But we'll have a large presence there. A number of people from all over the country. At World of Concrete that was held recently, we actually had a trailer outside with the Reprieve brand, an 18-wheeler with the Reprieve brand and demonstrations and things to show people so that people could understand what it is. And we had great interest and a lot of traffic, despite the fact that it was over by the masonry stuff. You know what I mean? It's like even being in kind of a different place, we had a lot of people come through and a lot of interest shown in the product. So it's nice. So I'm sure ConAg will be exactly the same. We'll have a lot of hoopla on it. Our fibers are winning a number of awards. We won from the Fiber Association, the Tesla project won, best large project for last year. And Reprieve has won an award there, I believe. Top of my head, I believe they have. But it's nice to get the awards, but it's all about building faster, cheaper, greener. Right? That's what it's about.
That about does it for this episode. I'd like to thank Vance again for taking the time to speaking with us. And thank you for taking the time to listen. Tune in soon for another episode of the Digging Deeper podcast hosted by 4constructionpros.com. Make sure to subscribe and share all those fun things that you can do on your podcast platform. Until next time, thank you and stay safe.